For 20 years, Dr. Thomas Andrew has been chief medical examiner in New Hampshire, a foot soldier on the front lines of the opioid epidemic. Last year, New Hampshire had 500 opioid-related deaths. Dr. Andrew and his deputy, Dr. Jenny Duval, each performed 250 autopsies. By law, that's the limit per examiner. Any more, and a state can lose accreditation. But what about the other deaths in the state? New Hampshire officials say they'll hire another pathologist and then replace Dr. Andrew as well because he's about to enter divinity school to minister to addicts before they get to his cold steel table. Dr. Thomas Andrew joins us from Manchester, New Hampshire. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And you are in the process of leaving. You still have open cases that you're dealing with. How can you describe to us how overwhelmed your office is?
Well, when I first started in 1997, this was a state that saw 30 to 40 drug deaths a year. When you're seeing 500 drug deaths a year and your national accrediting body says, by way of an autopsy standard, that any known or suspected drug overdose deaths shall be autopsied, the numbers just don't add up. Because if we were to do all of our drug overdose cases and reach our limit of autopsies per pathologist, how would the homicides get done? How would the traffic crashes get done? How would the suicides get done?
Well, you're not allowed to refuse to do them. And as we said, the state says they're going to bring in a third coroner. But are you still worried? You're leaving. Other states have lost accreditation because of the opioid epidemic.
Well, that was certainly a possibility for us. What I am happy to report is that we were awarded full accreditation on the basis of our most recent inspection. Our inspector was convinced that we, in good faith, were addressing our numbers issue, that the quality of our work product was exemplary in every other way, and so we were awarded full accreditation, with the proviso that they're going to check on us again in a year to see if we made good on our promise to get this problem addressed.
Yeah.
We now have two open positions.
Okay, that brings us to another problem. So you're going to be leaving. Your deputy, Jenny Duval, becomes the chief. You're looking now for two more forensic pathologists. But there aren't that many of them. This is not a field that people are going into.
There's the rub, isn't it?
Yeah.
Only 27 young people this year took the certifying examination for forensic pathology. So the applicant pool is very small, and in the face of the opiate crisis, the jobs are multiplying like so many mushrooms after the rain. I just got back from Scottsdale, Arizona, where we had our National Association of Medical Examiners meeting to try and recruit, to talk up our jobs and our positions and life here in New Hampshire. And I found to my horror that we are up against many, many, many jurisdictions who are now hiring because they've added staff to respond to this.
And talk a little bit more about the work itself. This isn't neat and tidy the way it is on CSI, from my understanding.
Well, like many things in life, there are seasons in the life of a forensic pathologist. At least that's been my experience. Very early in one's career, I think you find out whether or not you are hardwired to do this for 20, 25, 30 years. And many people wash out quite early. Those who can go into that next season of their forensic life when they are developing their craft and they develop with that a fair amount of swag. I've seen everything, I've done everything, nothing can faze me now. And that's a dangerous place to be because if you completely shut out the humanity that's on the table in front of you, I don't think you can effectively minister to the families who are left behind when you make that phone call after the autopsy to explain to them the findings and give them some sense as to what's going on. And I didn't use the word minister by accident.
I know. I was just thinking you are going into a ministry, but you have already been a minister.
There was a seminal article in our field. It was written way back in the 1950s by Lester Adelson, and it was called Forensic Pathologist, Family Physician to the Bereaved. I take that very seriously.
So there's that. you know, burden or honor?
Well, it is both.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can take its toll depending on the nature of a given case on a given day and what's going on in your own life.
Right. Then there's the actual work. And again, we don't want to go into too much, but I alluded to it. It's just not pretty. I mean, we're reading about, you know, a foam that seeps out. It's caused by opioids or brains that are distended or just the youth. Does the actual work itself, has that taken a toll? I mean, seeing so many young lives.
It seems like a simple question, but it is quite complex. The privilege, as you used that term, of actually being able to look inside of that amazing machine that is the human body and try to sort out what has happened to that particular individual is a privilege beyond measure. And at the same time, it's scientifically and intellectually exceedingly stimulating. Mm. On the other hand, as you enter that next season of your forensic life, then you start asking those bigger questions. How have I contributed? Am I simply cataloging the horrors of interpersonal violence or self-abuse or self-neglect? How have I contributed to the public health's improvement in some way? And I know we do. It's all tremendously important work, but it is taxing on one's soul.
And as you've watched the epidemic go from, you know, heroin to fentanyl to carfentanil, the elephant tranquilizer, it's gotten exponentially worse, and it doesn't feel as if there's been a response to it.
That is a part of some of the frustration, to have seen this develop right before our eyes. As early as 2004, 2005, we were identifying clear-cut trends in increased deaths due to opioids, but at that time, the culprit was prescription opioids. At least some subset of them went on to become habituated to their opiates, and as they became medical orphans, so to speak, they were fired by their medical practices for abusing their opiates or using their opiates inappropriately, started to try and get them illicitly from street vendors. And that obviously led to exposure to heroin, which was much cheaper. And then heroin gave way to fentanyl and its analogs. And now we are seeing not 100 or 200 drug deaths a year. We're seeing 500, and we don't see any end in sight.
The New York Times reports that in Ohio, some medical examiners store corpses in cold storage trailers in their parking lots. In Florida, they hire private body transport services to drive them somewhere else. But you started to say that you start thinking in this season about the bigger questions.
Well, I certainly don't want to give the impression that I was driven from this office by the opioid crisis. As a matter of fact, I told Dr. Duval when she was first hired 15 years ago to please be aware that I was going to retire in September of 2017. After that amount of time under the same leadership, things can become stale. You may be looking at things the same old way. Now, that being said, the opioid crisis certainly didn't make it difficult to leave either. You know, it does mount because of the way it has changed one's practice. You have this, you know, rather stimulating mix of cases, but then it becomes dominated by this one type of case, and that's what gets those wheels turning about, what am I contributing here? What kind of difference does this make? The point is, it sharpens the call. You realize you've got X amount of gas left in the tank, and either I could choose to limp through this another 10 years and see where this goes on the accounting end, or I could finally attack this by way of extension ministry to youth outside the four walls of a church. If you can instill moral and ethical values in young people that can somehow help to inoculate them from that other so-called friend of theirs who's going to come up to them in middle school with the weed or the pill or heaven forbid, that packet of powder, then you have maybe, you know, saved that one starfish off the beach.
So we understand you're going to become an ordained deacon in the United Methodist Church to serve the Boy Scouts of America as a chaplain, but also to serve hikers?
The United Methodist Church has a ministry on the Appalachian Trail. The AT runs through 11 different United Methodist conferences, and one of those conferences has a ministry that is called the Appalachian Trail Chaplaincy. I'm very much interested in throwing my hat into that particular ring. So many people are on that trail trying to chase demons, and what you are is a quiet, gentle presence there, a safe place for that person to try and process these things that are haunting them so.
Dr. Thomas Andrew, again, he's going to be retiring as chief medical examiner in New Hampshire and will enroll in divinity school. You could have gone fishing.
Could have, but I'm a lousy fisherman. I can't play golf. I can hike decently, but this is what I want to do.
Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.